Hi everyone, Camilo here. It's 1 p.m. in Santiago, 2 a.m. in Tokyo, and 7 in Berlin. We're live. You're listening to Cosmic, exploring the world of change via the arts. Thank you for being here. Talking to all kinds of artists in season 3 of the show. Today on a topic that is dear to my heart and that I spend every weekday working on, actually. I came across someone who I felt directly connected with, like a cosmic bond going like phew. I reached out and I said, "Hello, Chris Jordan, I think we have important things to talk about." And then he did phew again. And what's up, choof, and choof, and choof, a lot of cosmic bonds. We were indeed cosmically connected already. And a couple of weeks later, here we are. And I'm really proud to amplify what this man has to say. And it's just a start. Some of you are going to love it. And some of you are going to love it and say, "Whoopsie daisy." Yeah, there are a couple of hot potatoes in there, but don't worry, we'll take it easy. Chris Jordan is an American photographer and film producer. His documentary films and photographic art pieces tell moving stories that you're not ready to forget. You might have seen Albatross, the film, or some of his previous shots of birds filled with plastic on Midway Islands. This whole thing started in 2009, like years before the more recent plastic pollution media madness. We can say that Chris has been all the way through this hurricane as a storyteller. And it's a great honor to have him bring his current conclusions to Cosmic today. I'll also feature some quotes from his most recent TED Talk that I highly recommend. Links in the notes. And, as always, we have prepared a special set of soundtracks to transport us. So, get a drink or something pleasant. Sit comfortably. Adjust your headphones. Yes, just like that. We're taking off. Chapter 1, An Adult Conversation.
Six-year-old boy, and the parent, with the best of intentions, wants to have the six-year-old boy play piano, learn to play piano. "You'll thank me later," that parent is thinking. Takes the kids to piano lessons, but the little boy doesn't like practicing. so he doesn't practice. And the parent gets a little bossy about it, and the kid still doesn't practice. And it escalates until, after a long time, the parent is yelling at his little boy in an abusive tone, emotionally abusive. And the little guy is cowering in the corner in a state of paralysis. That's where we are together. It's time to change the story. I think it's time for the art world, for the environmental world, for the whole world, to let this dark storm of impending apocalypse, disaster, catastrophe, terror, panic, let it move on through. It's time for an adult conversation about how to solve our problems. I don't mean that as a diss on any young activist. I mean it as a diss on us adults who are supposed to be showing them what it looks like to be mature leaders who have wisdom.
To understand that Chris is not talking about it from the outside here, just throwing a couple of punchlines and going home. No, he's actually torn by this. Here's what he told me last week when we spoke.
A few months ago, I came to Chile to make a documentary film about lithium mining. And when you go to the places where lithium is being mined, it's this incredibly sad experience of just utter environmental devastation. In this fantastically beautiful ecosystem. So I started looking at it, and it brought up all of these questions about how to make a documentary film on that subject. And it really got me thinking about the entire genre of documentary films and the entire kind of world of environmental activism that for such a long time has just all been about bad news. And here I am looking at more bad news and having this feeling of like, blah, like terrible, this, the energy of it is just blah, depressing. And I started filming it, and then when I would come home and look at the footage, I would have that, like, terrible feeling. I got into this quandary of realizing I don't think the world needs that anymore. How can we get past that kind of dark bubble of energy and bad news into something new, but that doesn't live in denial of the bad news? that's the question that's been in my mind for months now, just turning and turning and turning. And I can tell you one thing that seems really clear to me, and that is that everything we were doing up until now didn't work. So it's a moment where we can truly allow ourselves to think completely creatively about a new way to be, a new way to be activists, because we can say for sure that up until now, it didn't work.
Let's masticate this for a couple of minutes, because it is the prerequisites to be able to take this discussion forward. There is what we choose to talk about, the topics, the story angles, the narratives, and then there's also the format and the tone of voice we choose to use, right? The how we say it, the how we present the content.
Shame is the hardest feeling of all to bear. This is another thing that's been going on in the environmental world, or just in the general world for the longest time, is everybody shaming everybody else. We are swimming in shame in our culture, and we can't help shame our own selves because of the insanity of our consumptive practices.
Maybe it's time to admit that blaming and shaming doesn't work. Blaming and shaming became the same thing as having a conversation about responsibility, right? How did that happen? Or trying to convince people, it doesn't work. And it never did, actually. If I explain to you why you need to change your behavior, your life choices, stop flying, adapt your diet or your consumption habits, which directly relates to your identity, by the way, even if I have all the evidence, all the scary pictures, and all the stories to convince you, what I am actually doing is making you feel guilty. Guilty about your identity, in many cases. Yes, your identity. And we might feel that it sometimes works, but that's when we're talking to people who were kind of ready for that change anyway, right? Most times, people intellectually understand what we are saying, but they cross their arms, they feel threatened, and we miserably fail. Exactly like what may be happening right now between me and you at this very moment. Because if you identify as someone who likes to explain to others what's wrong and what choices they should make, you're probably feeling uncomfortable right now because I am adopting this explaining tone and telling you why this is a bad idea. And your identity comes under threat. So you might get distracted, switch to another podcast, or forget all of this in a couple of hours. And that's how the mind works, right? Now that we deconstructed what is not the right approach, let's go towards what is truly effective. Back to our piano lesson story.
Parent is yelling at his little boy in an abusive tone, emotionally abusive. And the little guy is cowering in the corner in a state of paralysis. That's where we are together. It's time to change the story. Here's what I want to do. I want to go to that little guy. I want to kneel down, take his little hand, and say, "Dude, I got us tickets to a Herbie Hancock concert. Let's go immerse ourselves in the transformational, healing power of beauty."
Chapter 2, The Power of Beauty.
Who's the most powerful environmental activist on the planet? You know who I think it is? I think it's Herbie Hancock. Or you can just insert whoever's your favorite musician. Laura Pausini, that fantastic Italian singer. Herbie Hancock is operating on a completely different channel, on a completely different level. Just beyond shame, beyond anger, beyond rage, beyond everything. He's like operating on this cosmic level of just pure vibration, the pure energy. That's what I think we really need right now. There's an incredibly powerful transformative energy that art can carry when it gets out of the kind of didactic, finger-wagging, shaming world and just reminds us of something super fundamental. The absolute core of our being reminds us of the beauty and the miracle and the mystery of our world. So I've said many times that if Herbie Hancock were to stop playing piano and become an activist and go work at a soup kitchen or, you know, become a guy who gives speeches about plastic in the ocean, it would be a huge tragedy. Because I think he's the most powerful activist that I know of in the whole world. And that just, it points to me toward the transformative power of art that works in a whole nother dimension. Than all of the sort of political activist stuff that we're talking about. Interesting, because it seems like the worse the problems get in the world, the more irrelevant art and beauty become. Tell you that my silver is gold, though we're much too old for make believe. And I know what it's like to be whole and not be held. Funny how I still. Is that there has never been a time where art and beauty are more important than right now. Can I tell you a secret? My wings are made of plastic. My wings are made
plastic. My wings are made of plastic. My wings are made of plastic. My wings are made of plastic.
Now, let's start to draw the parallel with Chris's approach to photography, because it's very interesting. And since it's International Jazz Day today, did you know? Let's put this as a background.
So there is this tremendous power that the medium of photography has, and it's what keeps me coming back to it decade after decade. And here's my philosophy of it. Is what a photograph is, what a photograph really conveys, is the relationship that the photographer had to that thing. That's really what's contained in a photograph. And if you think of what is a relationship, from a human to a human, what relationship is one self comes forward and the other self comes forward and those two selves meet and there's a third thing created that is the relationship. And if either of those two selves comes forward too strongly, then it can have the effect of crushing the other one. So if one person comes forward all full of stories about the other person, then they crush the ability of that person to really express themselves. And that's what we call objectification.
A bell.
And in my photographic process, what I realized is I don't want to come forward at all. Because, like, if I walk into a forest and the minute that I look at a tree and I say, that's a Douglas fir, those are all Douglas firs, I just came forward and laid my story on those things and crushed the ability of those things to express what they are. Because those aren't Douglas firs. When you're standing in a forest all by yourself, there's no human thought, there's no human process, there's no human anything, and none of those things are Douglas firs. Every single one of those trees is its own unbelievably complex, incomprehensibly complex, vast civilization of sentient beings. Each tree is like a city, like a billion Los Angeleses. And every tree is a completely individual thing from each other. And as soon as we come in and say, that's a whole mountainside of Douglas firs, we put a story on them that affects our ability to experience them. My whole photographic process is about coming to my subject with the emptiest possible mind. And I don't want to impose anything. as much as I can. I want to withdraw myself, withdraw all of my stories and all of my projections and all of my tendencies to objectify whatever that thing is. And the more I can get out of the way, then the more that thing can come forward and express itself. And it doesn't matter what it is. It can be a dead bird filled with plastic. It can be a forest. It can be a person. It can be a pebble on the beach that's just reflecting light in a beautiful way. The whole thing that I want to do as a photographer is get myself out of the way. I don't want to create an artwork. I don't want to create a composition that you look at and talk about composition. I just want to provide a window that the viewer can come and stand in the same place that I stood and have their own direct experience of that thing. That, to me, is the great power of photography, and it's what all my work is at least aims toward trying to achieve.
Mukongo kwa kumpemba mamelemba diakanda mbandanzilambazi etu.
Even this fascinating, actually, I should probably stop here, because me interpreting this parallel between Chris's approach and change communications would be undermining the very point of this parallel. I'll just say we're planning to cover didactic communications versus the ambiguous later on in the season, because that's also an important chapter that's connected to this. Conversation went on and on and on, and we started talking about Eisenstein, about beliefs, experiences, and how clearly we all live inside a matrix of stories from which we identify.
If we can see that, become aware of this invisible, unconscious, morphic field of stories that we each live in as an individual, and then as that we all live in together, there's collective stories. If we can change those stories and shape those stories, then we literally change the world.
Happening to me, standing out under the stars in the desert in Chile, that I suddenly remember and I realize I am alive and I'm aware. And for all of the science that we have, looking at atoms and quarks and cells and with telescopes into the cosmos, we don't even have the beginning of a theory of what awareness is. It's just the most incredible, mysterious miracle, and we each have it. And I'm standing out there in the desert, I realize I am aware, and I am literally a guy standing on a planet in a galaxy looking out into outer space. And in those minutes, in those moments, it's like checkmate. It's just game over. Because I realize I have absolutely no idea what's going on. If we could all remember that, the enormity of the miracle that we are each a part of, then I think it would give us a perspective that we could look out at those problems in the physical world and in here at all of the stupid stuff that we do to each other. And it seems like we could solve it all in a moment if we decided to. Humanity's most fundamental problem is a spiritual one. And I don't mean a religious one. I think religion and spirituality are, unfortunately, in many cases, two completely different things. So I'm not talking about religion. What I mean by spirituality is simply the practice of seeing things as they actually are.
Chapter 3, Canoeing on a Calm Lake.
And it's so weird and funny out there. There's a million people all preaching mindfulness, but none of them meditate. And everybody's putting quotes about beauty, but there's so little actual practice of it. And that's the thing that is transformative, is when we decide, I want to know, I don't want to miss out on the coolest thing in all of the experience of life, which is to develop a spiritual practice. My fear about art and my experience of a lot of my own art out in the world, it's sort of like, if you're, imagine you're canoeing on a very calm lake, and you put your paddle in the water and you do a paddle stroke and it makes a whirlpool. And I think, you know, artists, each work of art is one of those whirlpools in the world. And if the canoe keeps on going, pretty soon the whirlpool just goes down and is gone. And the lake is flat again. My wish for the world is that people could be convinced that spirituality matters, and not expect that an artwork is going to transform them, because If they don't want to be transformed, if they don't put a personal value on plumbing the depths of the miracle themselves, then it's just going to be that whirlpool that turns until it's gone.
Oh, but how can we get people to want to be transformed if we cannot blame them? If we cannot try to convince them? Well, you know the answer.
Advocating turning away from the problems. I'm not advocating living in denial of the problems. All I'm advocating is we need to change our relationship to each other about those problems. The problems themselves require our continued laser focus, more focus. Without the dark ball of catastrophic, frightening, terrifying energy that carries with it disempowerment and disrespect. Laser focus on the problems, and we can develop the ability to stand in a balanced place, to stand midway between the problems and hold the miracle that we are all a part of. Bring in beauty as an essential ingredient in the healing and transformation of our world. We all have that capacity. We all have that capacity. We all have that capacity.
Wow, I feel my chakras are in balance again. Thank you, Chris, for offering us this beautiful piece of wisdom, for helping us reconnect with what the universe is displaying all around us every day. This was cosmic, really. Coming weeks, Chris and I will be going nerdy on narrative strategy, storytelling, and change communications via Facebook Live or Instagram Live. We'll see. You're welcome to join us, of course. You should, actually. Let us know your thoughts and questions at hello@cosmic.show or via Instagram, cosmic.show. You know where to find us. And about this podcast, you know what to do if you liked what you've heard? Yes? Thank you to Etienne Previtali for the support with music and sound. This was beautiful. And thank you for tuning in. I'll speak to you next week. Cheers.